Hello and welcome to Beyond Approaches. Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzel.
We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing. We'd like to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. We sure would.
We be drinking and we be swearing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the show. This is the mini-sode where we talk about whatever strikes our, whatever tickles our fancy.
Mm-hmm. Whatever we want. Because this is Beyond Reproach and it's our show. It's not your show.
Yeah, deal with it.
Show. It's ever. This is the people's show.
It is the people's show.
You can request whatever you want.
It's about to say power to you people.
Yes, please tell us what to talk about because sometimes we're at a loss.
We love hearing. Recently, we've had emails from listeners before, but we love getting suggestions for topics. It's like, thank you for making my job easier.
Mm-hmm.
I love you. Yeah. Also,
yes. Is that weird?
It's not weird. Just embrace it. Yeah. Embrace the love that we have for you for making our job easier. Yes.
So today, to start with, I want to say that there's a new show. There's a new show on HBO called The Gilded Age.
Yes.
I believe I've already sort of told you about this a little bit. You've
bits and bobs.
Yes.
I've heard a bit. It's from the makers of what is that show?
Downtown.
BBC. How dare you? Downtown?
Downtown Abbey.
How dare you? Look at you playing an American.
Yes.
Downton Abbey. I love a period piece.
Yes.
I love just, you know, British shit from a bygone era.
Yes. Yeah.
I love all of that. And I just love British actors because, you know, that accent is so sexy. Any accent, really. I'm a sucker for all accents. Like, truly all accents. And they're just like, oh, what about like a Filipino? I'm like, I love it all.
Maine?
I don't love it all. I don't love it all. I am lies. Maine. Maine is such a weird one.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, everything is just shortened in Maine. And it's like you will read a name and then you'll hear someone from Maine say the name and you'll be really, really confused.
I feel like that's kind of all of New England. That's like...
Totally. Yeah. It is. Yeah. I think anything Boston onward, just everything is compressed. And it's just... That's just how it is. And that's... We accept y'all. Y'all Mainers. Mainland? I don't know.
Yeah, that's like...
Mainers?
Mainers? Yeah. But that's like in Massachusetts is like... The town is called... To read it on the map, it's called... Worcester, but Worcester.
Worcester. Whoa,
Worcester. It's Worcester. It's not Peabody. It's Peabody.
Peabody.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Peabody is such a fun thing to say.
Yeah.
Peabody. Peabody is better than Peabody. I'm sorry. Totally. I agree with Peabody.
Yeah.
Because it sounds really fun.
But so this new show, The Gilded Age, I've actually only seen two episodes so far, but so far... It kind of feels like the focus is going to be on old money, sort of established New York families like the Astors and those kinds of people versus and sort of the conflict between those old money families and the nouveau riche robber barons that are sort of moving into their territory. It almost feels sort of sympathetic to the robber barons, like poor us, the old money people are being mean to us and not letting us into society.
That sounds very American.
Yeah. It kind of glorifies all of their wealth and power. So I'm kind of hopeful that things will change and they'll at least
talk about all the crime that they were doing.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm hoping that they'll kind of get to, if they don't highlight it, at least they sort of touch on the fact that the robber barons were really bad people.
That we just assume people with money are good.
Yeah.
And we don't think about how they get their money, yet we look down upon like drug dealers and like the fucking Astors only had money because of their drug dealing.
Yeah, totally.
But they were white.
Yeah.
So that's called industry.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It is garbage. It is propaganda. It is white supremacy at its core.
Yeah. Yeah, and class supremacy too. It's like poor people that come into money don't deserve it. Rich people that have family money, they were destined to it.
Yes.
But so we'll see. I don't know. It's only the second episode that I've seen so far.
Two episodes,
it could take take itself in another direction. And I'm really hoping that they will highlight sort of like some of the...
So who's the new nouveau riche? Like, it's the Astors, they're old, like Astors and the Vanderbilts are like the old ones.
Yeah, it would have been sort of like the Carnegies and the... but they don't, they're using false names.
Yeah.
But it's sort of modeled on real families. Okay. There were a lot of like railroad money people that were coming in.
Being the new ones.
Yeah. Okay. Not going to hold my breath, but I'm hoping that they will do better to sort of highlight the fact that they were coming from, they were making their fortunes in really terrible ways.
Ill-gotten ways.
Yeah, exactly. But so I recently talked on the show about a political scandal that came at the very beginning of the Gilded Age. The Crédit Mobilier scandal, also known as Credit Mobilier.
Yes.
The Credit Mobilier scandal both set the tone for the corruption of the next 30 years and made the monopolies of these robber barons possible. Let them do this.
Yeah.
As I was doing my research for that story, I was coming across all of these articles that were very sympathetic to the robber barons, very sort of defending them, saying that they didn't deserve to be called robber barons. They were being unfairly maligned.
Yes.
Because they devoted so much of their wealth to philanthropy and doing good for society.
In the end, I guess.
I mean,
for tax breaks.
Yeah, exactly. So first and foremost, I want to say that robber barons are called robber barons because of wage theft.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're called robbers because they were stealing wages from people that they were underpaying.
And that's how they made their fortunes.
Yes, exactly.
Wage theft.
Yes, 100%. They were using their power, they were using their political influence to keep wages down artificially, and they did everything in their power to crush labor movements so that they could stay rich by keeping their employees poor.
Oh, if we had to pay our employees, then we would make less money. I love that meme that you, I think it's on your Instagram right now.
All the corporate labor whinings through the years. Like corporate whining.
Through the centuries at this point.
Yeah, well, I'll try and save that.
It's like, oh, we can't do this because we're going to be broke, or we can't businesses are going to go out of business.
If we pay for the labor that built our business. If women have to be paid the same as men.
Come on, paying all races the same, we'd be out of business.
Yeah, America. So for several reasons, I have been thinking a lot lately about the legacy of the robber barons. Mm. And today, I thought this would be a good time to talk about philanthropy.
Oh, I'm excited for this.
Yes. So wealthy people have been spending their money on good causes for centuries, since there have been wealthy people.
That's why you have money in theory.
Yeah.
To give back.
But it wasn't until the Gilded
Age. Not to go into space.
You mean it's not to launch a dick into the sky?
With your little boyfriend? No, that's not what you do.
So it wasn't until the Gilded Age that modern philanthropy really took the shape that we sort of know and recognize today. And it all started with Andrew Carnegie. He believed that successful entrepreneurs were morally.
I love morally. This needs to be a word.
They were morally obligated to spend their fortunes helping others. In 1889, he wrote an article called...
He sounds like a communist.
Yeah.
If you really think about it. Yeah, no, I know. But anything that is like a good thing is communism.
Yeah. He was being good for bad reasons.
Yeah.
As they all are. Yeah.
I mean, at least they were trying to be good.
Yeah. Trying.
Trying.
They didn't get there, but yeah.
That's why I said trying, because I know.
Yeah. So he wrote this article called The Gospel of Wealth that became the guiding philosophy
for... Oh, God, for the Gospel of Wealth? Yes. Shut up. Ew.
He says, he who dies rich dies disgraced.
Stupid. Whatever. Wow. What, like, he's like jerking off as he's writing this book.
I'm so fuck great. Off. Yeah. So by the time he died in 1919, he had given away more than 90% of his fortune, over $350 million, which is about $4.8 billion in today's money. Along with giving to hundreds of causes, he also built more than 2,800 public libraries.
Yes.
Founded what is now known as Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, and spent millions constructing New York's Carnegie Hall and other concert venues. Following Carnegie's lead, John D. Rockefeller helped build University of Chicago. He helped fund medical programs that led to vaccines for meningitis and yellow fever. He built major schools for public health at Johns Hopkins and Harvard. Other large-scale philanthropists included Henry Ford, who founded hospitals.
Boo! Yeah, no. We hate you.
Yes. Carnegie was worse, way worse.
Way more anti-Semitic, though, during the rise of Hitler? I don't think he was.
No, probably not.
I don't
not.
Think he was. No. So
he was worse in other ways. He was worse to the people that made him rich.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But he didn't contribute to, like, global anti-Semitism during the rise of Hitler.
Not that I know of.
Okay. I feel like Ford is really, truly the worst person that we put on a pedestal that I can think of.
Oh, 100.
He was doing so much in the 30s. Yeah, I feel like I do a real... I don't need to just talk about square dancing. I need to just, like, go at him.
In actual detail. Yeah.
Just do a scandal where I just kick him in the dick.
That's fair. He deserves it. But he did fund hospitals, and he created the Ford Foundation, which at the time was the largest charitable foundation in history at the time.
Yeah.
Industrialist John Paul Getty set up the wealthiest art institution in the world, but...
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Getty Images.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. But while all this sounds great on paper...
Was he a drug dealer as well?
Probably. Yeah.
No, drug dealing was old money. This is new money.
While all of this sounds great on paper, and certainly building hospitals and funding vaccines is honestly pretty great.
Amazing. Good for public health.
Wonderful things.
Yeah.
Most philanthropy was being done for very selfish reasons.
Wait, what were their
reasons.
Microchips then? Let me stop.
Were they putting them in the vaccines? That's a good question. But so they were doing this philanthropy for very selfish reasons. For one thing, who goes to concert halls and museums and libraries?
The uber-ish.
Yes. The leisure class. People who can afford to take the time to go to concert halls and museums and libraries.
Yeah.
And they were building these monuments to their own names, mostly in wealthy neighborhoods, you know, in New York, building them uptown.
Yeah, all uptown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in other cities,
little
too.
Little did they know, like, decades later, like, regular people could go. Yeah, they probably wouldn't have built them, knowing that, like, the poorest could go as well.
Yeah. Some of the libraries were being built in smaller, but... The museums are all uptown. Concert halls are all uptown. Mm-hmm. You know, in these sort of wealthy neighborhoods where they can go to them, but the poor can't afford to get there or take the time to get there. But even more importantly than that, philanthropy was a way to whitewash their own terrible reputations.
Yeah.
That's what this is all about. So what do you think of when you hear the name Carnegie? Or Carnegie.
I think of Carnegie Hall.
Yes, Carnegie Hall. A lot of people also think of Carnegie Mellon. It feels like it's very, it depends on where you live, if you say Carnegie or Carnegie.
I think when I was living in Ohio, I would think of Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah.
Before I moved to the city and I now know where the hall is.
Yeah, exactly. That's because Andrew Carnegie spent big bucks, 90% of his fortune.
He had a lot of fortune to spend.
To cover up some really terrible shit that he had done in his past. Uh-oh. Conditions in his Pittsburgh steel mills were awful even by 19th century standards.
Damn.
Employees worked 12-hour days, 6 days a week.
Whoa.
And they got just one holiday off a year. Do you want to guess which?
Christmas?
4th of July.
Oh, that's disgusting. Yes. Ew.
He was Scottish, too.
Oh, wow. Wow.
They didn't get Christmas off. They got the 4th of July off.
Ew, propaganda.
Yes.
Gross.
Work was so physically demanding in his steel mills and so dangerous that most workers had to retire by the age of 40.
Because they got injured.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to get too far into Carnegie, just because I might revisit him at some point in the future. But he was also...
sounds great.
He was awful. But also, on top of that, he was also a ruthless union buster.
Oh, that's how he made his money. Yes,
he was internationally infamous for being... for the violence he unleashed on his employees when they tried to strike for better conditions and pay. Yes.
Shit.
Like, ruthlessness. Wow. So, when he vowed to give the bulk of his profits away to charitable giving, a lot of people were understandably pissed.
Yeah.
Because his charity did not extend to improving the lives of the people who were making him rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't get anything back for what they had sacrificed to make him a rich man. One Methodist bishop denounced Carnegie's philanthropy as an anti-Christian phenomenon, a social monstrosity, and a grave political peril.
Yep.
And Carnegie's response?
Uh-oh.
Quote, "Trifling sums given to each worker every week or month would be frittered away upon richer food and drink, better clothing, more extravagant living."
So what?
"Which are beneficial neither to rich nor poor."
That's not true.
It's not stopping you from eating rich food and wearing extravagant clothing.
What? Wow, what a piece of shit.
Yes.
What a garbage human being.
Yes. These also sound very similar to arguments against welfare today. Like, oh, they'll buy iPhones.
Oh, they're going to buy drugs. And it's like, you buy drugs with your money. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly.
Shut the fuck up.
Yes. So he said that by keeping profits high, he had more money with which to serve society. He believed...
Oh!
Yes.
Oh! Serving society.
Stealing from the poor to give to the poor. More like stealing from the poor to give to the middle class, essentially. So he said that he believed that by building libraries and schools and museums, he was providing people with the tools that they would need to improve their own lives. And if they didn't take advantage of those tools, that was on them, not on him. He was a social Darwinist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a white man.
Yes.
Who came from wealth.
Yes. So his workers, in response to this, asked, what good is a book to a man who works 12 hours a day, 6 days a week?
Thank you. Yeah. When will I have time to enrich myself and pull myself up by these bootstraps that you didn't have to pull yourself up by? Like,
He was like, when he came from Scotland, he was dirt poor.
And but he was a white man in a white supremacist country.
Most of these men are
so
white.
So, like, you get to be a king here even if you don't have money.
Yeah.
And if you, if circumstances align and you get really lucky, you
can
become a king.
Fortune smiled on him and he became a king and then is pissing on all of the people who are just
people
like
who
him.
Come from India at this time can't be a king here.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He can be a king.
Yeah.
Like, it's not from nothing.
Yeah. But so, of course, his Gilded Age contemporaries were also getting rich, exploiting their workers, too. Speaking of John D. Rockefeller, Theodore Roosevelt said, "No amount of charities in spending such fortunes can compensate in any way for the misconduct in acquiring them."
Facts.
Yes. So fast forward to today, and income inequality is so bad that we are basically in a second Gilded Age.
Is it the same? Is it extreme?
I didn't really look
at
how extreme, but it's getting close if it's not already.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I remember in school, like, learning about how, like, wealth, like, this was decades ago at this point, and how this was, like, this shining example of, like, how we could never go back to this era because
I would
things
venture
were
to
so
guess
different.
If you tried to compare, like, Warren Buffett and Jeff Bezos and the Gateses to poor people living in Kentucky,
it's
just as bad as it was back then.
Damn.
Yeah, if not worse. Yeah. But I did, don't quote me on that because I did not actually do that. This is a mini, I'm trying to keep it short.
Yeah.
It's very hard. This is going to be sort of another long episode though. Again, just like back then, today's robber barons are using charitable giving to try to get people to associate their names with the good they've done rather than the reprehensible ways that they built their fortunes. Today, Warren Buffett is the biggest philanthropist in history, ever. He has given away more money than anyone in history.
Wow, really?
He, much like Carnegie, has pledged to give away 85% of his fortune.
I thought Carnegie did 90%.
Yeah. Close. He's 5% off.
He can do 90%.
I know, he could. Yeah.
Come now.
He should. I mean, why not? If you're going to do 85, what's that other 5%?
That's
garbage. Bill and Melinda Gates are right behind him doing the same thing. So I decided to Google what the world's leading philanthropists are throwing their money at.
Oh, God.
I had to laugh when I saw how many charities are focused on, quote, unquote, poverty alleviation. First of all.
In this country or other countries?
In this country as well.
Oh, wait. How hasn't it been?
Yes. Poverty alleviation does nothing to fix the root causes of poverty.
Like, so what are they doing with their money?
They're getting to like homeless shelters.
No.
You're putting a band-aid on the problem that you caused.
So I recently did a mini about the Poor People's Campaign, and we know how to alleviate poverty because it has been done in so many different places. You just give people money. It's not fucking rocket science. They're doing it in Alaska. I was dipping my toe in like the grad school waters last semester, and I took this human development class, and the final project we were asked to pick a topic that just like spoke to us, something that like intersected human development at any life cycle. And I chose child poverty because it is such a huge issue. The biggest group of people in this country are children in poverty.
Yeah.
And it's something that can persist throughout your whole life. And even like in utero, there are stressors because of a mother in poverty into the DNA of your child, and it can persist throughout the whole life cycle. Yeah. And we know how to change this. And it's not just something that, like, oh, we've seen other countries give people money. We're giving money to Alaskan citizens, and they have the lowest rate of child poverty in this country because of their UBI.
Wow.
We know how to do it.
We could do this.
We know how to do it. And like my professor's just like, oh, this is so political. And I'm like, it's not political.
It's not.
It's not political at all.
Poor babies. What are you talking about? Why is that political?
I still got an A, but like that was her comment. I'm just like, oh, you sound really white.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sorry. I derailed your conversation.
No, that's completely on the same line as, yeah. But
we know how to alleviate poverty. These fucking programs are garbage. Give people money.
And bitch, you wouldn't have to give so much money to fucking soup kitchens and food pantries if you weren't also using your money to fight against raising the minimum wage. You're the reason so many people are poor because of wage theft.
Oh, absolutely.
You're rich because so many people are poor.
Yeah. And wage theft is a thing that you can't fight without a lawyer.
Yeah.
And it's by design that poor people are taken advantage of and have been for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
There's no recourse. Whereas like a private property sort of situation, someone steals a dollar from Costco, they can go to jail.
Yeah. I'm kind of using wage theft loosely when I'm sure they were intentionally like not paying them when they should have been paying them, but they're also just not paying them enough. You know, it was a set wage.
There's no overtime.
Yeah.
They were working crazy conditions.
Yeah.
They weren't being paid for the work that they were actually being doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's wage.
But their wage, even the wage they were getting, should have been higher.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King Jr. once said, philanthropy is commendable, but it must not cause the philanthropist to overlook the circumstances of economic injustice that make philanthropy necessary.
Look at him with that piping hot tea.
Yes. Apparently that's not one of those Instagrammable MLK quotes.
That was not in the Ford commercial Gates, for that truck.
Yeah, the Gates Foundation was not sharing that quote on Instagram this year. So here we are 3 years into a pandemic, and despite all of this poverty alleviation that all these rich people are doing, the global poverty rate has gotten so much worse in the past few years.
Oh my God. The rates of poverty in this country compared to other developed nations, it is so shameful.
It is unacceptable.
Like so upsetting and disheartening to just look at the graphs
yeah
with your eyes and see like, wait, what?
Yeah. Seriously.
And then also to see these spikes, like comparing the UK to the US, like in the 80s, still the US was like at least three times higher, but like there was the same spike in the 80s with like Thatcher and Reagan.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But then after Thatcher, they instituted policies where they gave people money, and the rate dropped in half that year.
Instantly.
That year, it dropped in half.
Don't look. Shh.
Like,
I'm just putting my putting my finger against your lips.
But it was instant.
Yeah.
It's like, we know how to do this and we don't do
but
it.
But we don't want to.
Out of a dollar, we're spending 55 cents on the military that we have all over the world. So I decided, and I meant to put this in my last minisode, that like, I am over the Department of Defense. I'm calling it the Department of War.
Yeah.
Again, yes. I'm going back to the...
Bring it back, yeah.
So I want to do this as a scandal, like the Switch, because the Switch like is... That. It's fucked up, the marketing of it.
I'm excited about this.
Because it's not like we have some force here and we're defending ourselves. It is offense. It is war.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I'm sorry. I've derailed this whole thing that you're talking about.
No. I'm very much looking forward to that. The global poverty rate has gotten so much worse over the past couple of years, while the world's top 25 philanthropists are collectively $150 billion richer than they were a year ago.
Wow.
The philanthropists, not just the top 25 rich people, top 25 philanthropists. When pressed on the negative aspects of philanthropy, Home Depot's founder Bernie Marcus said...
He's a piece of shit.
He's a garbage person.
How is he a philanthropist and why is he being interviewed for this?
He is a philanthropist by modern standards. I'll get into what that means in a minute. He said, all this money is going for charity to help people. Would they rather we bought yachts and built mansions? Buying yachts and building mansions.
Yeah.
You're doing that too.
Yeah.
As well as being a philanthropist. But... Bernie Marcus's money is not going for charity to help people. It is going for charity to harm people. Ugh. He is infamous for giving huge sums of money to charitable foundations who focus on anti-LGBT agendas, anti-trans agendas.
Wow. What a piece of shit.
This is why I will be shopping at Lowe's.
So this is, in his mind, philanthropy?
Oh, yes.
Hurting people.
It's legally philanthropy.
Wow.
For tax purposes, it is philanthropy.
Ew, that's so gross. The robber barons weren't doing this.
They were.
Or were they?
They were. They also had charitable foundations
that were just doing like white supremacy schemes. Things.
Yeah. They were also building monuments to their names in a way that a lot of philanthropists today are not doing.
Mm.
They did use charitable foundations sort of
as a way to funnel money into their own like causes, i.e. their themselves.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think this is a good time to take a little break.
Yeah.
Breaksy.
Wow. That's a lot.
Hi, I'm Natalie.
And I'm Cass.
And we're the hosts of Shared History,
a comedic history podcast exploring the stories of the often overlooked or underrepresented.
The people and events your history books may have glossed over, whitewashed, man-washed, or left out completely.
From the Mayan creation myth to the Deaf President Now movement of the 1980s.
From ancient scientist Avicenna to first female principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, Wilma Mankiller.
If you saw it in a footnote once,
or have never heard of it,
we are here to share it with you.
Join us in a rotating guest list featuring scholars, writers, teachers, entertainers, entrepreneurs, subject matter experts, and more.
Tune in to Shared History on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, you know the drill.
And follow us at Shared Pod on Instagram and Twitter.
And as always,
share you later.
We're back.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest issues with philanthropy today is charitable contribution tax deductions. Mm. Basically, the amount that you can deduct from your tax returns is based on your progressive income tax bracket. So the higher your tax bracket, the more the government forgives when you give to charity. So if you're taxed at 40%, and you make a $1,000 donation to a soup kitchen, the government forgives 40% of that donation. So $400 of your $1,000 donation comes from the government, not from you, essentially. Mm. Meanwhile, a middle-class person who has a 20% tax bracket.
Yeah.
If they make that same exact donation, the soup kitchen is getting $1,000 no matter what.
Yeah.
But that person
is spending 80% of that donation.
Exactly. So that donation, the same donation is costing them $200 more than it does the rich person who has more to give. And millions of Americans.
That's so fucked up. Yes. Our tax system needs to be fundamentally torn down from the bottom. And
totally.
This is so unfair.
And this system only works if you itemize your taxes.
Yeah.
And millions of Americans don't itemize. Yeah. So those people, they're still giving to charity.
I mean, this
but
system,
they don't get anything back. They get no deduction at all. So those people are
the fact that we have to do our own taxes is its whole other.
Yeah. Other countries aren't doing this.
No.
Other countries don't make this system.
They don't make their citizens pay to do their taxes.
Yeah.
They do their taxes. It's a part of just being a citizen.
Yeah.
It's done by the government. The government gives you the money. There's no withholding.
Why should you pay to give the government money? You have to pay to give the government money.
It's because we live in a business. Sense.
Yeah, exactly.
A really predatory business, unfortunately, in a lot of ways. Why is there a TurboTax? Why?
Seriously.
The government knows how much money we make.
Yeah.
They can talk to our employers.
It's completely unnecessary.
Why is this so cumbersome? Because they make money. Because it's a whole industry.
Yeah. And other private industries can make money off of you having to give your money to the government. But so on paper, the fact that the higher tax bracket is, the more you get back, seems like it's sort of meant to be something to incentivize charitable giving from the people with the most to give. You get the most back because you're giving more. You're not, poor people, middle-class people, and rich people are not all giving $1,000 to that soup kitchen.
Yeah, you're
so right. In theory, it's supposed to incentivize charitable giving.
Mm-hmm.
But since wealthy people tend to choose charities or charitable
foundations
that align with their own views and their own values, it actually makes charitable giving less democratic.
Mm.
Especially because tax subsidies for charitable giving cost the U.S. Treasury about $50 billion a year.
Why?
Because we're forgiving $50 billion from rich people that rich people would otherwise be paying in taxes. We're forgiving just for charitable foundation tax credits, $50 billion a year.
So this is money that can be used for schools and healthcare 100%. And all the other things that we need.
Infrastructure, education, healthcare.
Oh, that's bad.
$50 billion
This is a terrible system.
Yes.
This is a garbage system. I mean, that's why we are where we are today, but it explains a lot.
Yeah.
But this is an awful system.
When Obama was trying to pass a very early version of Obamacare that was much more similar to universal health care, everyone was screaming about how expensive it was. So he was saying that he was going to find ways to bring in new money to the government to make sure the whole idea was going to be budget neutral.
Mm.
His idea, or at least one of his ideas that he suggested, was to cap the income tax deduction for charitable contributions at the level it was at during the Reagan administration at 28%. Cap it at 28%. Oh, my Lord.
But a black man said it.
Everyone lost their goddamn minds.
That's communism.
Everyone lost it. People were ripping out their hair and screaming about how it would be disastrous for the nonprofit industry.
For what?
Because if rich people had a cap on how much money they could get back, they would stop giving to charity.
That's garbage.
Yeah.
Look at the rich people. They're going to stop giving all this excess money that they just have because they're not getting it right back.
What does it say about rich people if they're only giving to money because or
to
giving
give
to charity because they're going to get it back from the government? That proves that it's not about generosity in the first place. It's about a tax scheme.
Yeah, it's a tax scheme, totally.
But also studies have shown, multiple studies have shown that that's not true. If the tax deduction had been capped, people would have kept giving at the same rate. Or very
because
similar
they
rates.
Have excess. Yeah. What are they going to do with this money? They're going to put it in their coffin?
Yeah.
In but their kids' coffins?
Some of the biggest voices against this idea were from the charities themselves.
What charities, though?
Even healthcare charities. Charities that are focused on things like
St. Jude's is there doing this?
Yeah. St. Jude's, children's hospitals, breast cancer, diabetes, whatever. But if this had passed, this would have been a major win for the American health system.
Yeah.
We wouldn't need these charities for breast cancer and children's hospitals and diabetes if everyone had guaranteed health care.
Yeah.
But these charities
socialism
are loyal to their donors and to their CEOs and
their boards.
The board.
Yeah.
More than they're loyal to the American people. So that didn't happen. We didn't we didn't get Obamacare in the way that we were supposed to before it was watered down and mansioned.
I was about to say, yes.
Yeah.
Mansioned.
So basically, rather than collecting tax money from the ultra rich and distributing it where it is most needed democratically, we're letting the ultra rich withhold that money from the public and decide which issues they want to focus on. And then we just have to hope that it all works out for the best. And the wealthy are not, as I already said, they're not using their money to build libraries and museums and hospitals the way they were 150 years ago. They're just not. Jeff Bezos is over here launching dicks into space.
He's like, yeah, we have enough libraries. Yeah. People know what they need to know. They have the internet.
Yeah, I need to be the pioneer that funds space tourism for rich people to go look at the stars or whatever. But most philanthropists today, the billionaire philanthropists, are funneling their tax-deductible gifts into charitable foundations that they control.
Yeah, God.
These foundations are a mixed bag.
How is that legal?
It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But again, America.
Yeah. We value corporations over people.
Yeah. Some of these charities are doing good things. The Gates Foundation's main focus is upon improving healthcare in developing nations.
Why aren't they improving healthcare here, though?
Because that would cost them money.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be so rich.
Yeah. They don't really care about people.
Exactly.
They care about population control, and it's really
upsetting. Well, they also care about legacy, which
is... But their legacy is going to be garbage.
Well, the legacy... So this is the thing. The vaccination programs that the Gates Foundation is funding...
You're not Dolly Parton.
Yeah, exactly. But they're helping to eradicate polio across the developing world. They're hoping that they can reduce measles deaths by 90%, tuberculosis by 45%, and malaria by 30%, which these are all good things.
Yeah.
But
I like that they have all this in their fucking spreadsheet.
They're doing this in developing nations, but they're doing it. Those are all diseases that everyone knows and are very well-known dangerous diseases in developing nations.
Malaria is a huge one.
Yeah.
If they can eliminate malaria, that's it.
Yeah. But
public good.
By focusing on these few big diseases, they are drawing money away and attention away from the more basic needs of public health systems in these developing nations. According to the Los Angeles Times, quote, Gates-funded vaccination programs have instructed caregivers to ignore, even discourage, patients from discussing ailments that the vaccinations cannot prevent. So they're like, here's a shot for malaria, but shut the fuck up about everything else that's going wrong in your world.
You're cured now.
Yeah,
shut your mouth.
We are the generous benefectors that cured you, and
don't
you have no
you know?
More problems. So their main concern here is legacy. Mm-hmm. They're paying to have the Gates name associated with eradicating specific diseases, well-known diseases.
Got it.
The 100 years from now, when people think Gates, they're going to like, oh, they're the ones that eradicated polio. Mm-hmm. They're not going to think, oh, they're the ones that
but they haven't
made themselves rich. Well, that's the goal. But they're also doing some real harm because they're missing
so
the bigger picture.
They have so much money. I don't know. I feel like if they wanted to really eradicate it, it'd be gone.
So far, it says that they've eradicated like 90% in the developing world.
Okay.
Yeah. But either way, they're doing it because it's a disease that everybody knows, and it's going to make them look magnanimous. You know, it's going to make them look like the good guys, even mm-hmm. though they're rich because there's poor people, you know, in this country. That's one of the better privately funded charitable foundations. A lot of them are really just private interest think tanks. In disguise as charities to get a tax break. These private foundations have very little transparency or regulation at all. Of the roughly 100,000 private foundations in the United States, more than 90% of them have no website.
Whoa.
You don't know what they're doing.
Whoa.
And since they're privately funded...
No website? You're allowed to do that?
Yeah. I mean, if you're privately funded, nobody's actually giving...
You're not allowed to have Oh, yeah, you're right. I guess if you're private, like...
Yeah. They're donor-directed, so they're not accountable to anyone.
So there's probably a lot of drug money in that.
I'm sure,
that's a way to wash your cash.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
And we're talking about education reform foundations that are actually actively trying to break up teachers' unions. Mm. There are foundations trying to get voter ID laws passed to make it harder to vote. Charitable foundations researching ways to privatize Social Security, deregulate Wall Street, and find new legal strategies to dismantle Obamacare. These are all charities that the rich can give their money to wash it so they get more of it back from the government. Essentially, we're giving the wealthy tax breaks.
I've been watching Ozark, and I'm just like, there's drug money in everything.
Oh, I haven't seen Ozark, so I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. They're washing like Mexican drug money in Missouri, just giving it to politicians. And, like,
oh, imagine that. Yeah. Rich people giving money to do dastardly things to politicians. I don't know.
Never void of it.
Never void of it. Yeah. But essentially, we're giving the wealthy tax breaks to try to destroy our democracy. We're paying for it. So obviously not all charity is bad. That's not what I'm saying at all.
No, definitely
and
not.
Honestly, not That's even not all charitable foundations are bad. That's, again, not what I'm saying. And even, honestly, not all philanthropists are bad. Dolly Parton is doing incredible things with her money.
Is the best. Like, can we just clone her?
Seriously, yeah.
If only all of the people with a lot of money in this country were Dolly Partons.
Yeah, like, you remember that when they first cloned a sheep, its name was Dolly.
Dolly, yeah. They knew.
Yeah.
That's what we needed more of.
But Jeff Bezos' ex-wife, Mackenzie Scott, is also doing some really incredible things
with her money, too. Yeah.
But the thing to remember, if you take anything out of this episode...
Philanthropy is not going to save us.
Yeah. No. And most billionaire philanthropists are either using their money to do just enough good to whitewash their legacy...
Or do bad things.
Yeah. Or they're using charitable giving deductions as a tax scam to funnel money into private interest think tanks disguised as charitable foundations. And yet society gives them all a gold star for doing such great things with their money. If the rich were only able to use the same tax deduction as everyone else, it would make charitable giving much more democratic. And if the rich paid more in taxes, we wouldn't need to give to as many charities for poverty alleviation and healthcare in the first place. So obviously this is a real big topic to try and squeeze into a mini. I feel like our minis have been getting longer and longer lately.
They've expanded.
Yeah. This was a big topic to try and squeeze into a mini. That's it. That's all I'm going to say today. If anyone wants to explore this topic any further, this is a big topic.
Yeah. I learned so much.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing it.
I recommend a book called Just Giving, Why Philanthropy is Failing Democracy and How It Can Do Better by Rob Reich. Mm-hmm. Not Robert Reich. Just Rob.
Just Rob.
Yeah. That's it. That's all she wrote.
Yeah, that was really good. I suspected that a lot of philanthropy was a fucking tax scam.
Yes.
And thank garbage. You for confirming what I thought I already knew. Now I know it.
Yeah. It's
dastardly.
It's so fucked up. And it's, why is this legal?
Yeah. It shouldn't be. It should not be legal. That you shouldn't be able to donate to your own air quotes charity.
Yeah.
Literally. For a tax break.
Well, that's like the Trump Foundation.
You're giving yourself you're giving yourself money and getting money from the government for giving yourself money. In what world should this be legal?
The Trump Foundation only got caught doing this because he's so well known. You know what I mean? He highlighted his own grift.
He's really bad at crime.
Yeah.
Truly bad.
But
I listen to that podcast about how he wrote a check from his foundation for his kid's Boy Scout, I don't know, organization fee. It was like a check for like $17. He couldn't fucking pay that. He took that from his foundation. It was less than $20. He wrote a check from the foundation. Yeah, he's so rich.
Yeah.
Okay. Girl, bye. But yeah, thank you for that. That was a lot, but really, really important stuff. And totally ties into the robber barons. And you were telling me that people online are just like, oh, we shouldn't call them this, robber barons. It's like negative.
They gave back.
Yeah. And I'm like, robber barons to me is too kind.
Yeah.
Because it's like barons. They're not barons.
Yeah.
Like, they're not like above us.
They thought they were.
Yeah.
They certainly did act like American royalty. Yeah. They thought that they were American royalty because they were so wealthy.
My drink is empty. I just have like two cherry pits in my cup. I would... No, no one can hear that. I tried to shake my glass so you could hear my cherry pits. So yeah, we're done.
We done.
We's done. thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. Mm-hmm. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzel.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, podfather, Lord and Savior. Yes,
magical wizard.
Magical wizard. We could not do this without him.
That's it. The end.
The end. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
'Beyond Reproach' is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.